from the heart of flyover country. He's not on the far right, and he's certainly not on the far left. Like you, he's somewhere in the middle. This is Dale Carter's America.
Well, I am back. Kurt, obviously, you had a guest with you last week. How did that go?
It went really well. We got a lot of great feedback on the episode with Johnny. So, yeah, thanks everyone for listening. And hopefully I didn't, you know, embarrass myself too much.
Is it okay for me to come back? I mean, I want to ask.
Yeah, it's my show now. I'm the captain now. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you know, a lot happened over the week that I was gone. I want to talk about that a little bit. But first of all, a point of personal privilege. While I was in Indiana over the weekend on my way back from Florida, my grandson was born. My fourth grandchild was born, Benjamin Simon Wayne Carter.
Congratulations. That's great news.
Beautiful little baby boy. And while because of COVID, I couldn't get there to see him and hold him in the hospital, they're going to come out this way in the next couple of weeks, and I'll get to see him there. So I'm very psyched about that. To the news of the day, and there is quite a bit of it, with some interesting irony and some little twists here. You've heard about the Colonial Pipeline, right?
Not the Keystone
XL, the Colonial Pipeline. It's offline. They had a cyber attack there, and now North Carolina is in a state of emergency with fears of gas shortage. Even as far into the country as we are, by Memorial Day weekend, that's going to push the price of gas up over $3 a gallon.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is headed our way. And in a note of irony, I mean, there's so much irony, it just drips with irony. The Biden administration has relaxed the regulations allowing tanker trucks now to take fuel to the East Coast, so they have gasoline.
So we're not okay with pipelines, but we're okay with tanker trucks.
Exactly. Well, they're not okay with any of it. And eventually, you're going to have to put up a sail on your vehicle and hope you catch a wind on I-70 to get where you're going to go. But that's the irony, that they had to relax their own guidelines because the Colonial Pipeline is offline. It's coming back, but we'll have more to say about that coming up here in a little bit. There's been another deadly shooting at a high school. Now, this only happens in the United States, right? That's the what they want you to believe, the narrative that this only happens in the United States. Outside the United States, everybody's peaceful. There's no gun attacks. There's none of that, right?
No violence of any kind.
Yeah. Well, this latest deadly shooting took place at a high school in the country of Russia. At least 9 people were killed, several others injured in the attack. At least one of the gunmen taken into custody. There's video images of kids jumping out of windows at that high school to avoid the gunman. But that just kind of puts a little pinprick in the balloon of those folks who think that this only happens in the United States.
Yeah, and I would go back to the point that we mentioned previously a couple weeks ago about the statistic of 89% of mass shootings happening in gun-free zones. So,
yeah.
You know, I don't know what the law is on gun-free zones in Russia, you know, so I'm not going to comment on that, but certainly here that's the case, you know.
My guess is the Russian authorities will deal with it swiftly.
Yeah, yeah.
Regardless of what happened. Next news item, the Golden Globes celebration canceled by NBC. Now, on the surface of it, they have issues with the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. Apparently, that organization has no African Americans anywhere on it, so that's why they're canceling it until the Hollywood Foreign Press Association gets their act together. I believe there might be another reason behind it. There have been a slew of these ratings or these award shows,
yeah,
and the ratings have all been at historic lows.
Yeah, I was going to say the what? What are we? I've never heard of it. Is this some?
You've never heard
some
of what?
Award show?
The Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
No, I was making a joke about the Golden Globes because nobody cares anymore.
Well, nobody cares about any of this stuff because what happens is, you know, people out here in flyover country who watch things that we watch or go to movies that we go to never see them on these shows.
Right.
And you get these actors and actresses and directors and the like, and when they go up there to get their little statuette or whatever, they make their political statement, their manifesto, and people are sick of it.
Yeah.
And guess what? Out here in flyover country, we count toward the ratings, and when we decide we don't want to watch that crap anymore, the ratings go to historic lows.
Yeah, definitely. And, yeah, I mean, just in general, even with the Oscars, too, I feel like the past several years that, I mean, I haven't really been paying that close attention, but most of the movies are things I haven't even heard of, really.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that gets to my thing of the difference between a film and a movie.
Right.
You go to a film to be educated, indoctrinated, whatever you want to say.
Film is art, right?
Yeah, and you go to a movie to be entertained.
Right.
And so the movies that entertain us quite frequently don't get these awards.
Yeah,
because the upper crust who extend a pinky whenever they drink, they don't want to watch them. They don't want to award them and all that. I mean, it comes all the way down to country music. I mean, we just had the lowest ranked ever by the ratings Academy of Country Music Awards show. And if you watch that show and listen to KFKF, you'd see a huge gulf, a huge disconnect. I mean, the guy out there right now who's knocking it out of the park with 10 number one singles right out of the box, which has never happened in the history of country music, a guy named Luke Combs, was nominated for Male Vocalist of the Year. That was it. No nominations for Song of the Year or Single of the Year, even though he's crushing it. And they buried him like a cat turd on that awards show. And yet they took Mickey Guyton, who is a wonderful young singer, African-American, has never had a hit single, never. The closest she got was 35 on the chart, which is not a hit, right?
Right.
And they made her the co-host of the show. I mean, you know, they're trying to be politically correct.
Yeah.
And at the same time, the folks who love country music and listen to country music, that doesn't reflect them. And therefore, they had record low ratings for that.
Yeah, you would think that these people would be smart enough to see the writing on the wall, you know, with all of these award shows and the whole Hollywood, you know, establishment or whatever, you know, you'd think that they'd see the ratings going down and make the connection that it's because they're playing identity politics and trying to inject politics into everything. You know what I mean? But I guess they're not because they keep doing it. So
they do keep doing it. And I guess we'll test the record lows.
Yeah.
The ratings.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, if you love country music, I'm just going to put in a little plug here for 94.1 KFKF. And even if you're like my friend Rick Rainey, who listens to this podcast in South Carolina, you can get us anywhere.
That's
on
right.
The free KFKF app that you can get at Google Play or the App Store. If you're looking for some sense of normal, it has not abandoned everywhere in this country. We like to think that our podcast is, you know, 45, 50 minutes of normalcy every week.
At least normal to us.
Exactly. and we're all that counts here, right? If we think it's normal, this is what we're going to do. And if you give us 45 minutes to an hour of your time, you must think it's fairly normal too.
Yeah, or you just hate listening.
Exactly. If you hate us and you listen to us, we love you the same. Trust me on that. All right, next news item, and this is something that is very good news. The good news is starting, and it's going to keep coming. We are going to get back to normal in this country. The Kansas City Chiefs have made the announcement that Arrowhead Stadium, which had a minuscule 16,000 fans allowed per game last season, will now be at full capacity for football this fall. So 78,000 screaming fans in the loudest stadium on earth. It's going to be great. Patrick Mahomes, you know, and the Chiefs kind of got their butts kicked in the Super Bowl, and I think that's going to fuel them forward. Love what the Chiefs did in the draft. I mean, usually I come out of the NFL draft going, eh, oh well, so what, right? Yet look what the Chiefs did. They got the left tackle from the Baltimore Ravens, and they gave up their first-round pick to get it, so that is essentially our first-round draft pick. They got a stud linebacker out of the University of Missouri with their next pick, and we really needed help with the linebackers. And with their next pick, they went back to offensive line and got the Big 12 Player of the Year twice, Lineman of the Year twice. So he's going to be coming to the Kansas City Chiefs. So and there were other draft picks too, but when you go just to what we did with the first round pick and then getting that linebacker and getting that center out of Oklahoma, I am very happy, looking forward to another season of the Chiefs and feeling like with Patrick Mahomes healthy and an offensive line, great offensive line, we've got a shot to be right back at the Super Bowl again.
Do you know on the issue of opening the stadiums and stuff like that, do you know what the regulations are going to be around masking and all that kind of stuff?
I don't. And, you know, we can get into masking here a little bit later when I take you on my vacation down to the free state of Florida.
Oh, I can't wait.
Which we're going to talk about as well. It's Armed Forces Week. We want to thank all of you who have worn the uniform of this great country or wear it now. On my radio station, KFKF, we do something every summer from Memorial Day weekend through 9/11. We call it the Summer of Freedom, and this will be a special Summer of Freedom because we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on our country.
Yeah, it's crazy that it's been that long.
Do you want to hurt me and tell me how old you were?
I believe I was in fourth grade.
And you didn't have the beard then, I'm guessing.
I did not have the beard, no. No.
Well, you know, I was on the air at KFKF the morning that that happened. And those of us who, you know, were adults at the time, I think it's going to be one of those seminal moments where you always know what you were, where you were, what you were doing.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be huge.
Well, I remember, too. I mean, I don't remember a lot from being in fourth grade. You know, I mean, memory of childhood tends to be pretty cloudy, but right. I do remember that day pretty well, so.
I remember getting spanked by a teacher in the fourth grade.
Really?
Because corporal punishment still existed.
Oh, well, there you go.
And the times I got spanked in school, it was for laughing in class. So if you were a cut up and you could get me to laugh, you could get me spanked.
Well, that didn't stop you, so no. We still are today. I guess it didn't work.
Hey, it formed me into the man I am today, so I'm all for corporal punishment. So Armed Forces Week, we thank our members of the Armed Forces and look forward to Summer of Freedom on KFKF. It is also National Police Week. We salute the men and women, you know, who keep us safe and free here on the home front. And interesting news item that I came across, and I know Quentin Lucas probably listens to the podcast, and he'll want to give his take on this. But there's a possibility that the KCPD residency requirement could be lifted by the Missouri legislature. Now, you know, the Kansas City Police Department is governed by the state of Missouri. Did you know that? It's not locally governed.
No, I did not know
that. That goes way, way back to when they had corruption in the police department, back in the Pendergrass days, you know, when gangs were ruling Kansas City, and the state has never relinquished control back to the local jurisdiction. So now the state is looking into this, and if approved, the measure would allow officers who now have to live in the city limits of Kansas City, Missouri, to live within 30 minutes of the city. Now, the mayor is against this. He argues that it would deepen divides between police officers and their communities. What do you think?
Well, I don't understand why there's a requirement to live within the city. I mean, I guess it makes sense because you want your community to be policed by members of the community. I understand that. But at the same time, I mean, there are some areas of Kansas City that are nicer, you know, but I don't think you should force somebody to live in a crappy area, you know, just because they're policing there.
Exactly. I think they should be able to live within 30 minutes of the city. I think that's fine.
Yeah, it seems reasonable.
In Blue Springs, you know, where I live and governed for a while on the city council, we didn't require our officers to live in the city limits.
Right.
Some of them do because it's a nice community, but some of them don't. So that is on the docket here. And on National Police Week, an interesting discussion with my stepfather when I was back in Indiana. You know, he was a city policeman for his whole career. And sometimes he'll share things with me about it. And he wanted to talk about the whole Derek Chauvin thing.
Right.
And we know that Derek Chauvin, bad guy. I mean, you're not going to defend him. And I'm going to say every time we talk about this that there are bad apples in every organization. But what my stepdad wanted to talk about was the officers who were with Derek Chauvin, who were also fired. They were rookies. Right. You know, within days of getting their shield. And he said, you know, I was thinking back to when I was a rookie. And he said, I had a training officer at the time, and I was a brand new rookie. He said, there was no way I would open my mouth and say, you're doing this the wrong way.
Well, not only are they getting fired, but they're getting prosecuted.
Exactly. And that's just, that's wrong.
What did he say about the Chauvin trial itself? Did he have?
We didn't really talk about the trial all that much, but
or the verdict, you know.
Yeah, he told me stories though that involved his training officer and how big a personality he was, how overbearing he was, how long he'd been on the job, and just the thought of a rookie cop days on the job, basically countermanding anything that the guy did.
Right.
You know, just it wasn't going to happen.
Because Chauvin was the senior officer on the scene, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think all three of the other cops were, I mean, fresh off the out of the academy, just right. getting their shield right. and just moving forward. But the bottom line here is on National Police Week, I want to thank all of you who keep us safe and free here on the home front, city police officers, sheriff's deputies, detention officers, whatever your role is in keeping us safe and free on the home front, just know that we have your back here and we thank you during National Police Week. Next subject, elections have consequences. And I have a little message here, not for Democrats, because Democrats who listen, liberals who listen, both of you, you are getting exactly what you want out of this election. So, I mean, everything that's happening, everything that's unfolding, you voted for it, you believe in it, and God bless you, that's what this country is all about. My message is to Republicans and or conservatives who didn't vote for Donald Trump because, you know, at the time, it's like, you know, the guy's an asshole, he's always on Twitter, he's calling people names, yada, yada, yada. If you're a Republican and or conservative who did not vote for Donald Trump because of that, shame on you. Because everything that's happening now is your fault.
Yeah, elections have consequences. You know, I mean, I wish more people were involved earlier on in the process. You know, like you should be paying attention all the time, obviously, but more people need to vote in primaries and things like that too. Because if you don't like the candidate, I mean, you have an opportunity to do something about
right.
it. But then when you get down to the general election
yeah.
for president or for whatever, if it's for senator or what have you, I mean, then you have a decision to make. It's a binary decision essentially at that point, and you gotta pick one. And if you don't, then you know you're gonna be stuck with whoever.
You're
wins.
Not gonna drive cross country with either one of these guys. They're not gonna call you up to have a beer. You're voting. You should be voting for the policies behind that person. And now you, who are Republican and or conservative, have a chance to fix it. 2022 is coming up fast. And there's an opportunity to take back the House and the Senate, and you need to be more fired up than ever. Because what's happening right now is exactly what Democrats said they were going to do. Biden said he was going to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline, and he did. Of course, he didn't know that there was going to be a cyber attack on the Colonial pipeline. You know, we talked about this once before. There's a map you can get that shows the crisscrossing of all of the pipelines in this country. It's crazy. There's a bunch. I mean, it looks like the veins of a body. I mean, they're all over the country. So the Colonial Pipeline's a big one, and it takes a lot of gas to the East Coast. They didn't see that coming, but it kind of fits with their narrative of what they're trying to do, which is to get us off of fossil fuels. The border mess is another issue. He said, he telegraphed exactly what he was going to do. Trump said what he was going to do. Whether you agree or not, Trump was going to do what he was going to do, and Biden was going to do what he was going to do. And look where we are today. He's put his vice president, Kamala Harris, in charge. And as far as I know, she still hasn't had one press conference about it.
And she still hasn't been to the border.
No. And she probably won't go for any length of time. They wouldn't let the press in there for the longest period of time. And now they're shuttling people around so it looks better than it actually is. It's a mess. But it's exactly what Joe Biden said he was going to do. The next thing they said they were going to do, which Mitch McConnell is fighting as we speak in the Senate, was a federal takeover of election laws.
Yeah.
We can argue whether that's constitutional or not. I don't think it is. In fact, I think at their core, liberals hate the Constitution of the United States. It's an impediment to them. It's something that they've got to try and get around, get over, get through. They don't like the Constitution. The Constitution set us up as a federal society, federalism. It means we have 50 mini laboratories of democracy who are exercising democracy. And the goal is to kind of look around the country and see which ones are doing it the right way.
Right.
And then adapt that.
Yeah. And I think the federalizing of the election laws, it's kind of similar in some ways to like getting rid of the filibuster, right? Because you can make a similar argument if you're, for example, if you're speaking to a liberal, you might have that power now to control the federal election law. You might have a Democrat majority in Congress and you might have a Democrat president. But what's going to happen when it's reversed, when, Congress changes hands in 2022 or, you know, hypothetically, let's say, you know, Trump runs again and wins in 2024, now you have a federalized election system under the hands of Republicans. So it's going to come back to bite you at some point, just like getting rid of the filibuster is going to come back to bite you at some point, just like lowering the amount of votes necessary to confirm judges, federal judges, is going to come back to bite you at some point, as it did with Donald Trump, who appointed more federal judges than, you know, any of the previous several presidents. So, you know, I think a little bit of longevity is in order here, and remembering that, like you said, we have a system of federalism where the states have power to control, you know, how they handle things.
Well, they do. And where I would differ with you a little bit there is you're comparing the filibuster to the federal takeover of election laws, and they're kind of two different things, because the filibuster and also the raising or lowering of votes necessary to confirm judges are rules within the Senate. And those rules can change anytime that there is a difference in the majority. The problem here with this law that they're trying to get passed with very minimal majorities, in fact, a very slim majority in the House and a 50-50 Senate with Kamala Harris as the tie-breaking vote, is Joe Biden would sign this law.
Right.
And this would be something that would have to be overturned with another law, which is difficult to do unless you have majorities in both houses and you have the White House. So that's a little bit of a different deal there. And again, I think it's unconstitutional because the Constitution doesn't lay out what the Senate rules are. The Senate votes on those.
Right.
So the filibuster is a Senate rule.
Right.
But the Constitution does lay out how federal elections are supposed to be conducted.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I simply meant just pragmatically speaking, you know, in terms of the political effect of what it's going to create, you know, and that you put power in the hands of the federal government when you have power.
Right.
And then when the other party has power, they're going to use it to, you know, undo everything that you've done or don't do what they want to do. And, you know, it's a dangerous game that they're playing. But, yeah, I think it is unconstitutional because, like you said, in the Constitution, the power of establishing election rules is specifically given to the state. So it would almost, I think, have to be an actual constitutional amendment to solve that, would it not? Or to change that.
Or, you know, what they're going to try and do is pass this law. Mitch McConnell will fight it with every fiber of his being. He's already said he's going to do that. But if they somehow passed it, Biden signed it, there would immediately be lawsuits and it would go all the way to the Supreme Court. And I'm confident with a 6-3 majority that really, and it's so simple, a first-year law student ought to be able to see it. So it should be 9-0.
Right.
But it probably wouldn't be 9-0.
Right.
And that just gets us back to think five jumps ahead, because to your point, you know, and I said in the first episode of this podcast, I wasn't going to call people names, but there's no other way to say this. The idiots who came out, you know, on the steps of the Capitol and outlined their ingenious plan to fix the Supreme Court by immediately putting four liberal justices on the Supreme Court. I mean, how about one jump ahead? So when the Republicans take over, what? Four more conservatives.
Right.
And then the next time the liberals, four more liberals. And then eventually, you know, the funniest line I saw was when you get to 435, maybe you get to like 19% approval like the current House has. That's a great line. That was almost a Joe Biden moment there. Just going to move on here. Joe's coming back in a little bit because we've got a little drop from him coming up. But I want to talk about my vacation to the free state of Florida and Alabama and Tennessee and Kentucky and Missouri outside of Jackson and St. Louis counties. There's freedom going on out there. It is amazing when you get outside this bubble of Jackson County and or Kansas City. I mean, I told some of the folks I work with, I was just in a meeting before I came here, and they were all sitting around the conference room table. All of them had their masks on. And I said, folks, I have seen freedom. I've been outside the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Things are okay.
Right.
I've had both of my COVID shots.
Right.
I'm good to go. So I'm not going to wear my mask. I mean, if you get upset and don't want to have the meeting, there's the door.
Whoa.
Yeah. You know?
Old words, Dale.
I don't know that I said that, but it sounds really good on the podcast to say that I said that. The free state of Florida is just that. I mean, for a week, Kurt, I didn't even think about it. didn't have a mask with me.
Yep.
There was, you know, some people did wear them.
Yeah.
You know, you have that option. If you, it's a free country. If you want to drive around on I-70 and you're the only person in the vehicle and you want to have a mask on, I've seen that.
Right.
Have you seen that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you point at them and laugh or?
Well, I certainly judge them a little bit. I would be lying if I said I didn't.
I just, you know, the first stop I made for gas was where I usually stop. There's a quick trip in St. Peter's right outside St. Louis. It's in St. Charles County.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, get the mask. We're still in, we're basically in St. Louis, so I'm sure they're going to tell you, you got to have a mask on. And then I get to the door and it says, masks are recommended.
Right.
And I looked inside the Quick Trip and nobody had a mask on.
Right.
I'm like, my God, it's freedom.
Right.
I mean, I was waiting for a choir to open up and go, ah, you know, because it was like a freeing moment. And then as the further south I went, you know, that was the freeing thing that was going on there. And restaurants were at capacity. The places we went were at capacity. I mean, it wasn't overly crowded because school's not out yet. So the beaches weren't overly crowded. And I'm okay with that. I don't like crowds.
Right.
But, you know, people were able to do what they want to do. It gets me to this point in this observation that local governments who have control, whether it be Quentin Lucas or the Jackson County Legislature or Dr. Fauci, who is still talking about, you know, maybe we can lift the mask restriction. We got to watch out for the variants. Is it me or does everybody do a Fauci now?
I think everyone does. That's a pretty good Fauci.
Do you have one?
Oh, let me see.
We can't let you do what you want because you still have to listen to us. You have to wear your mask.
He's easy to do. Just have to watch for the variants. It's all about the variants, Kurt.
Hey, did you notice, actually, speaking of the variants, did you notice that it's not racist to call the variants by the name where they come from?
I did not know that.
But it is racist to call the coronavirus the Chinese virus.
Or the Wuhan flu.
Or Kung Pao Sicken, my personal favorite.
All right. So local governments slow to give up control, but they're going to have to. I'm guessing Wyandotte County has, because I've heard that the Monarchs are going to play to full capacity.
Yeah.
And I think they start their games this week.
Yeah.
You know, and Throwback Throwdown is going to be at the amphitheater. Azura, is that what it is? I can't. Azura Credit Union. They're the new sponsor.
Right.
You know, we call it Sandstone.
Right.
Because that's what it was for 100 years.
Right.
But we're going to be at full capacity for our Throwback Throwdown. So at some point, I mean, here's the news flash for you. At some point, Jackson County is going to give this up and we're going to be as normal as the rest of the country.
Well, the interesting thing is that we kind of have, to a certain degree, like Mayor Lucas is scaling back some of the restrictions on capacity and, you know, letting restaurants open and
slowly.
Things like that. But he's keeping the mask mandate. That's what I don't understand is like, what about masks is like magical that's the thing that you're keeping? I think if anything, we've seen, you know, the data has shown now that we have over a year of data into this, that the states that didn't have a mask mandate are not doing any worse. And in some cases, they're doing better than the states that did. I don't really see the point. You know, we have Fauci, you know, at the beginning was talking about don't wear a mask. You know, you're just touching your face and whatever. And it's just it doesn't make any sense to me. And I think eventually it's going to have to be lifted. But even here, you know, I have to say, you know, going out and about and stuff like that. I mean, the law is still in place. The local mandate is still in place, but people just don't seem to really care anymore. I think is the big thing that's happening here. Mm. People are just really sick of it. And, you know, people are less likely to be like, oh, you have to wear a mask. You know, now it's
the only stink eye that I've gotten on it was yesterday when I picked up our dogs. They were at boarding and I'm not even going to mention the place where I picked them up.
Sure.
But they had signs everywhere that said, you know, you must wear a mask. You must wear a mask.
Right.
And I carry it with me in case I'm going to get like that pushback or whatever. And there was a young lady who was working there. I don't know whether she was a vet's assistant or what, you know, and she just looked at me with wide eyes. And I said, so you're really serious about the mask thing? And she's like, yes, yes, we are. You need to put your mask on.
Right.
I'm like, well, okay, I'm going to put my mask on.
Well, I saw somebody posted, I don't know where this was, but a sign on a business that they took a picture of and posted on Facebook. And it said, we know that there's no county mask mandate. We don't care.
Yeah.
We know that you've been vaccinated.
Yeah.
We don't care.
Yeah.
We know that, you know, XYZ. We don't care. Wear your mask. And it's like, what is the point anymore? I mean, first of all, I'm not shopping at that business.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. You're going to vote with your feet. You're going to vote with your dollars and all that. It's going to be almost like, you know, when the smoking thing was a big deal. And, you know, my friend Bill Fickle, who listens to the podcast sometimes, he runs Side Pockets in Blue Springs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And for a while, you know, he allowed smoking.
Right.
You know, we at the city council basically left it up to the market to determine, you know, where you would go. Mm-hmm. And you would vote with your feet and your dollars. And Bill felt like for his clientele, smoking was really important.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point, that math flipped and he went the other way on it.
Right.
But it comes down to the market working and you determining where you're going to go to spend your dollars. And to your point, if somebody's really in your face about this ridiculous mask order and all that,
yeah,
you know, go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think people are going to do that, you know, and certainly that's going to happen once the mandate's lifted, because then you're going to have businesses that will not require it and businesses that still will require it. And then it's a simple decision. It's like, oh, okay, I can go to X grocery store. I don't have to wear a mask. I can go to Y grocery store, mm-hmm. and they're going to make me wear a mask. I'm going to go to X grocery store.
Yeah, exactly. That's called the market at work. Proud papa moment here for me. My oldest son, Drew, you know, it's amazing when your kids finally get it. I mean, are your parents conservative or liberal? I just wonder, because you're conservative and you're young.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if that bucks what your parents are, or if they're like, my God, he finally gets it.
Well, I would say that I'm certainly much more politically active and aware than both of my parents. My mom, I would describe as actually like a textbook centrist. Her and I talk sometimes and she agrees with a lot of things that I say, but she also like listens to NPR and stuff like that, you know, and I always tell her to stop listening to that garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But you know, she's definitely reasonable. My dad is a conservative, you know, he listens to the podcast. He's probably listening right now.
Okay.
But he's not nearly as, I would say, you know, politically involved or mm-hmm. he doesn't follow the news as closely as I do, and he'd be fine with me saying that.
Well, my son Drew is 34. He has two of my four grandkids, and he posted something today and it was just like, yes, he gets it. It was like a little meme here, so it may not mean much if I just read it, but it says, we've gone from 2 weeks to flattening the curve to show me your papers in less than a year. Did not see that coming. Spelled N-A-Z-I.
I see that.
Drew,
see what you did there, Drew.
Kudos. I mean, this is my son. He finally gets it. And, you know, they all do eventually. What's the old saying? If you meet like a young conservative, you've met somebody with no heart. And if you meet an old liberal, you meet somebody with no wallet.
Well, yeah, the version of it that I've heard is that if you're not liberal when you're young, then you don't have a heart, and if you're not conservative when you're old, then you don't have a brain.
Well, there's that too.
That's the version that I've
heard. All right. My early presidential favorites. Have we had a podcast since I just gushed over Tim Scott and his rebuttal to Biden's speech?
No,
I did it on Facebook. I couldn't remember if we had a podcast or not.
No, I don't think we talked about it, because I talked about the Biden speech last week.
Yeah. I love Tim Scott. I mean, you know, first of all, he could be a historic figure of importance. The historic figure of importance that I thought, even though I didn't vote for him, that Barack Obama could have been. I didn't vote for Barack Obama, not because of the color of his skin and not really because of the content of his character. I didn't vote for him because I didn't agree with his policies, much like I don't agree with the old white man who's in there now, Joe Biden, same policies, just a different race and all that. I do agree with Tim Scott's policies. And as an African-American, he can bridge that gap. He can help bridge that gap. We've got a lot of work to do, because I think race relations in this country are worse than they were before Barack Obama was president.
Absolutely.
And Tim Scott's a guy who could do that. And you know who's terrified of a Tim Scott presidency? Just terrified to his core.
Who's that?
Two people I can think of off the top of my head. Al Sharpton is one, and Jesse Jackson's another one, because they have made their living off of this divide between the races. They've fomented it. They've made it 100 times worse. And if a guy like Tim Scott comes in and says, you know, the American dream is open for everyone, doesn't matter what color your skin is, doesn't matter what your sexual orientation is, does not matter. The American dream is there for all of us, okay? The opportunity is there. When that happens, and it will happen at some point, I thought we would get closer than we were, but it will happen at some point, and I think Tim Scott could help get us there. When that happens, those guys are going to have to get a real job.
Yeah, I hate to burst your bubble, but I think that's a bit wishful thinking. I mean, he's a senator already right now. He gave the Republican rebuttal to the quote-unquote State of the Union, even though it wasn't that. So
right.
Why does that not apply now?
It would apply if he became president. I think that because he's not the Republican.
He's not the leader of the party.
Exactly. He's the president. And I still think the presidency holds something. It's special. It's important. And again, that's why I was rooting for Barack Obama to help heal this nation, even though I didn't support his policies. I think you can draw a distinction between the policies of someone and the holder of the office. Now, the holder of the office right now, I mean, I don't know that he knows what day it is.
Right.
and we've talked about that before, that's borderline elder abuse by the people who've put him out. I always said that as far as my show on KFKF, that regardless of who won the election, I was going to be the winner because I'd have fun with both of them.
Right.
You know, whatever party wins, at least give me a president who's funny so that I can have fun with it on the morning show.
Yep.
Barack Obama didn't even do that.
Right.
The most unfunny president we've had since I've been doing
cringy mornings. Too, because he was going on all those late night TV shows and just like, ugh.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Tim Scott, I didn't watch the entire rebuttal speech. I saw some clips of it that, you know, I had mixed feelings about. I don't think I'm as big of a fan of his as you are, I would say. He's come across in the past as sort of like a rhino, I would say, in terms of some of his legislative decisions and some of his rhetoric and stuff like that. He comes across to me as very politician-y, and like, and I would say the same thing about, you know, like Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy and that crew as well. You know, I think we're done with the politician class, you know, and this is something I talked about last week on the podcast, was about Joe Biden's speech. We got to get rid of the teleprompter, you know, just for anybody. You know, I want people who are going to be authentic and who are going to speak their mind and who are going to be transparent and not try and, you know, speak in these vagaries and like platitudes that politicians.
You want Harry Truman back.
Well, I want anybody, you know, I mean, anybody who
Harry
has
was
the
a guy
right
who
ideas.
Could do that.
Yeah. Who anybody who has the right ideas will implement the right policies and do it in a way that is not pre-rehearsed contrived.
Know, whoever is the nominee of the Republican Party in 2024 is going to have my 100% support. Because I'm voting for the policies, not necessarily the person behind it. I just think that Tim Scott could go a long way toward healing this country because of his background. The other guy I like a lot is Ron DeSantis, governor of Florida, where I was for a week.
Yeah.
Because Ron DeSantis, and this is going to get us into what I really wanted to talk about today, and we're 40 minutes into this thing, and that's Joe Biden's favorite three-letter word. Go ahead and drop that in now. Joe Biden's favorite three-letter word.
As Barack says, a three-letter word, jobs, J-O-B-S, jobs.
I just love that. We may have to do that again here before we're done. Because Ron DeSantis not only guided Florida through the COVID nightmare, probably the best of any governor in this country.
Yep.
I mean, you can make the argument. Meanwhile, you got what's his name up in New York State, you know, Cuomo.
Cuomo, yeah.
Who, you know, gets an Emmy or an Oscar or something that he got. And that could be another reason why the Emmys and or the Oscars are tanking in the ratings.
Right.
You know, about all that he did. He was the gold standard. And quite frankly, I bought into that for a while. I started watching his news conferences, and then I'd watch Trump, and I'd say, God, I mean, I think Cuomo's really got this going on. And then it turns out he was killing a bunch of old people, you know, and there are other things going on with Cuomo right now. Meanwhile, very quietly down in Florida, Ron DeSantis guided that state through COVID, and it's going fine down there. I can report that I was down there. Had a beautiful week. We had one stormy day, but other than that, the weather was nice. The governor has nothing to do with that. But the mask order is essentially, there is no mask order.
Right.
It's go where you want to do and do what you want to do.
Right. Well, that's the thing, is that he's done a great job on COVID of, comparatively speaking, their death rates and hospitalization rates and all of that are very good compared to a lot of other states. And that's even given that they have an older population than a lot of other states. And he's done it all without infringing on the freedoms of his citizens with, you know, mandatory lockdowns and mask mandates and all that kind of stuff. And he's gone even further, I would say, on other issues. You know, he just in the past month or two, you know, he issued an executive order, whatever you want to call it, that the governor signs, where he said that there will be no vaccine passports, quote
right.
unquote.
The new buzz thing.
There will be no requirements for any private business to mandate vaccines for entry or for employment and all that. That is a huge deal.
Yeah.
Another thing that he did was he banned critical race theory in the public schools in Florida. That's a huge deal too. You know, this is why I'm not a libertarian anymore, is because there's a difference between right and wrong. We should be guiding, you know, towards the objective good and away from the objective wrong, you know, and I think he's doing a great job of that. And it's funny to watch him because he's clearly running for president, right?
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And in fact, you know, I was there last week and he made some news last week because with COVID going on and all this unemployment money and different handouts coming from the government and all that came without any strings.
Right.
And he said in Florida, moving forward, you were going to have to prove if you were getting this money,
right.
you were out actively trying to find a job.
Right.
The string attached to it.
Right.
And somewhere, you know, a millennial just heard this and went, oh, I'm going to have right. to prove I'm trying to get a job?
Yeah.
The hell is this coming to? But, you know, so Ron DeSantis is going to be a serious candidate for president. And I'm just going to say this now, and I know that we have a lot of Trump fans. I know you're a Trump fan. I hope and pray every night that he does not run for president in 2024.
He's definitely going to run for president in 2024.
Well, I can hope and I can pray.
Yeah.
Hope is a strategy.
And I would say, you know, full disclosure, you know, I think in a lot of ways, DeSantis might actually be a better candidate than Trump.
Much better candidate. Because here's my theory on this, and I expressed this with my better half on vacation. And she, by the way, thinks I'm a liberal. That's how conservative she is. Mm-hmm. She thinks I'm a liberal.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
Okay. So I told her, I didn't tell her. You know, we had a discussion.
Okay. Yeah, watch
so
it.
You got to be careful
recorded
on that. is that everyone who voted for Donald Trump will vote for the Republican nominee for president. We need to get back those people who are conservatives and or Republicans who were not going to vote for Trump, because with Trump comes the entire circus that goes along with Trump, that it's a wedge. It divides and it makes people go look for something a little less crass, a little less off the prompter, and I know you like that about Donald Trump, that he's off the prompter. But there are people out there who want the presidency to have that aura that the presidency is supposed to have, not some reality show host who's going to go out there and throw bombs all day and try and get his scores up on Twitter and stuff like that. That, to me, is not what the presidency is about. And I want to win in 2024. I want to win in 2022. And to do that, we're going to have somebody who can get back those suburban women who voted for Joe Biden and who are now having buyer's remorse over everything we've talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree that we should constantly be expanding the base, you know, and expanding the conservative base in this country, and I hope that we're doing that on this podcast. But I think we have to be careful, because we can't do that at the expense of giving up on the messaging or giving up on policy and things like that. And I think for all of Trump's personal flaws, he did things as president that no other candidate of the 16 candidates that ran in 2020 would have done.
Agree.
For like moving the embassy to Jerusalem, like
right.
pushing back on the mainstream media.
While the Iranians.
Yeah, like pulling out of the Iran deal, pulling out of the Paris Climate
right.
Accord. Pushing back, I mean, maybe the biggest one, pushing back on the news media, the whole fake news thing that he, you know, I mean, he was at his rallies and he would point in the back and say, look at these
fake news. You
I know, but see, that's the silliness.
Nobody
that
else would have done that.
It's silly. It
got to a point where it's just completely
but
silly.
But he was absolutely correct, though. That's the thing. And
okay, this is a marriage counseling thing. You've never been married, right?
No.
Okay, I have twice, and maybe we've got a third coming up here. Would you rather be right or would you rather be happy?
But here's the thing. That's a false comparison because I'm not married to the president.
All right.
You know?
Well,
but what I would say, and this is why I would say, this is why I said before, I think DeSantis might be an even better candidate than Trump because he actually has a lot of those qualities that Trump has, but he has experience in politics, you know. But if you look at clips of him at press conferences and stuff, he's been accosted by the press at press conferences recently as well in the past several months, and he has pushed back on them. He's, you know, there was this whole thing that they ran on 60 Minutes, I believe, where they took this edited clip of him where he looked like an ass because he was talking back to the reporter.
Right.
But you watch the full clip, and the reporter was saying a bunch of incorrect stuff about his handling of COVID and trying to say that he was being corrupt in giving the deal to the Publix grocery store for handing out the vaccine because, you know, they donated to his campaign or something like that. It's total BS.
And a Democrat came out and defended him in that.
Yeah, I know. But if you watch the full clip,
right,
he very directly addressed the situation. He said, no, that's a fake narrative. I'm not buying into that. You're not going to stand here and talk to me like that. And that's the same thing that Trump did. And the same way that 60 Minutes handled that clip of him and edited it down and tried to make him look like an ass, it's the same thing they did to Donald Trump, and it's the same thing they're going to do to any Republican candidate.
Oh, well, they've done it.
It doesn't matter how nice they are.
Right.
It doesn't matter how, you know, presentable they are or how, quote-unquote, presidential they are.
Right.
It could be Ted Cruz. It could be, you know, freaking Chris Christie or Jeb Bush. You know, they're going to do the same thing.
Well, they did
to
it to George H.W. Bush back in the day. I mean, 60 Minutes has a long history of doing this sort of thing. Definitely not new there. I'll tell you this. I will vote for whoever the Republicans nominate because I believe in the policies of what the Republicans want to do. So if they nominate Donald Trump, I'll vote for him and get on the bandwagon.
Sure.
But you can't keep me from hoping in the back of my mind that he doesn't run and or somebody like DeSantis or Scott is the nominee.
No, yeah, that's fine. And I feel the same way, you know, and I think it's important to hash this out. And that's what the that's obviously way too early, you know, to really speak on it with any authority. But that's what the entire primary process is for, you know.
Well, we'll see what happens there. Hit that famous three-letter word again from our president, Joe Biden.
As Barack says, a three-letter word. Jobs. J-O-B-S. Jobs.
Okay. So I've been getting hit with stuff when I put stuff up on our podcast page on Facebook, and the reaction sometimes is boomer think. And it's making me feel like my grandparents, because my grandmother would get going on something and I'd be, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. You walk to school 12 miles, uphill both ways, snow all the way up to your armpits. That's right. And we worked. You know, so I get that. That's a generational kind of a thing here.
Right.
But I think it's getting deeper than that. There are some, and my friend John Kreisbergs, who is as liberal as the day is long, sometimes he listens to this, sometimes he doesn't. Early on in the podcast, he sent me something that actually makes the argument for the federal government paying people who don't want to work.
Right.
Not who can't work.
Right.
Who don't want to work. Do you get the implication of that? That means that people like you and me, because the federal government does not have its own money.
Right.
The only money it gets is what it taxes. Okay. So you and I, basically, our tax money supporting people who do not want to work.
Yeah. It seems
that's
like,
foreign to me.
Seems like a bad idea.
It just gets me going, and I get redder than my sunburn would show you from Florida. But it's just crazy. And there are people out there in your generation who think that's just fine and dandy.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, I've seen it promoted a lot by the, you know, progressive types in Congress and in the media and stuff like that, is expanding or making permanent, you know, some of the things that were put into place because of COVID, the extra unemployment benefits right. and the stimulus checks and all that
with
kind
no
of stuff.
Strings. With no strings. You don't have to prove you're trying to get a job.
Yeah, and I kind of saw that coming from the beginning, especially with the stimulus checks. You know, I don't want to say I was against it because, you know, it's one of those things where, okay, the government created this problem. The government shut everything down forcefully. So they should, I think, be responsible to some degree for alleviating that. But at the same time, you're creating this incentive structure where people, you know, don't have to work or people feel like they're entitled to something. They're entitled to some kind of financial payout from the government. And now we're seeing the ramifications of that in a lot of ways because people are hiring right now.
They are.
And people are not, and they're not being able to find qualified candidates.
They can't find them. And then we're going to get to that here in just a second. But, you know, one thing where I agree 100% with Donald Trump was he said, look, Joe Biden, we've got a diagram for you. Before COVID, we were at 3% unemployment, which is essentially full employment. If you right. wanted a job, there was a job there for you.
Right.
He said, if you don't do anything, this economy is going to come roaring back.
Right.
Well, Joe Biden couldn't do that. The Democrats couldn't do that. They've got their own feelings on things, and you see where we are today. There has never been, to your point, a better time to get a job. All you have to do is listen to my radio station. I was in my office preparing this, listening to my radio station,
yep.
KFKF, and every other commercial is, we're hiring.
Yep.
We're paying bonuses. We're paying this. We're paying that because we're trying to get employees to come back. There has never been a better time to get a job.
Yeah, and yet we've had, you know, people through our company, you know, and through what we do that have been begging for our help, you know, because they're struggling to hire people.
They are.
You know, it's really an issue.
So if you're looking for a job, I would encourage you to go to kfkf.com right now because there are lots of opportunities on there. I was going to, you know, just to infuriate the millennials and make them say, oh, you're a boomer thing. You know, back when I was getting those three letter words, jobs, J-O-B-S.
Yeah.
It's my favorite three letter word. You know, there's value in work because I don't know how it was with you, but my parents got to a point where they weren't going to give me money for things I wanted anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted money, I was going to have to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's value in work. You know, whether it was taking our lawnmower down the street and mowing somebody's grass to get some cash. Or, you know, then I got a paper route back when newspapers were a thing. They're not anymore. But, you know, my brother and I both had a paper route. And that's when I had my first checking account. I think I was in the seventh or eighth grade.
Mm.
You know, I had a checking account because I had to pay the printing corporation for the newspapers, right? And then I went out and collected money from people. And that's the first time I had a checking account. In fact, the first thing I ever bought with a check was for a Green Bay Packers hat. Now, why, I don't know, but I just remember that. You remember the first check you wrote, and that was my first check. To the point of they built a Burger King in my neighborhood, and I was too young to work. They wouldn't hire me.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to get a job there because there's value in work, that when you get a paycheck, you get money, and you get to go do things. It gives you a level of freedom. You know, I went to work for this greasy spoon. It was called Dusty's Breakfast House. And they were looking for a dishwasher, and it was a very brief period of time that I did that before I got into radio. And the summer before I got into radio, I was a day camp counselor at the YMCA. I mean, I rode a bus downtown to hang out with snot-nosed kids all day. and the reason behind that was because the YMCA was right down the street from the radio station, and I had gotten, you know, a meeting with the program director. I was 15. And I begged and pleaded until he finally put me on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the last 42 years. You know, that's
right.
My radio career.
Right.
So to me, there's always been work involved. In fact, right now I'm planning my retirement stage, which is about 10 years to get there. But I think even after I retire, I'm probably still going to try and do radio at some level because it's what I love. This is not a job.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I mean, you made a good point of just getting work when you're young and getting a lot of different jobs and trying to find what you enjoy, you know, and build a career from there, you know, get experience and things like that. That's something that I think everyone should instill in their kids and the next generation, and we should be promoting as a society. But like you pointed to, we seem to be going in the opposite direction.
We are. I mean, you know, and I worry about that to an extent because the government has made a promise with me, you know, because I've worked so long. I've basically maxed out my Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the highest level, but there've got to be people to fund that.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm funding my parents through my FICA mm-hmm. withdrawals, and you know, the next generation is going to fund me. That's how Social Security was set up, and I worry every day that that's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be financially insolvent at this point, so... Certainly, people. The sad truth is that people in my generation and younger, we should kind of, I think, be worried about Social Security a little bit. It's gonna at least they're gonna at least have to raise the age, if not, you know, scale it back on more significant grounds.
Well, and there's another little dirty secret that you may not know about it, but you can top out in what you has withdrawn from your check when you get to a certain salary level, and you hit that. They don't take that out of your check anymore.
Right.
So that is probably going to have to go up. It goes up a little bit every year, but it's probably going to have to go up substantially. And the retirement age is probably, I mean, they're going to have to do something. It's the third rail of politics. We talk about that, which means they don't want to tamper with it too much.
Right.
Because old people vote.
Yeah. Well, and old people vote disproportionately Republican, which is the sad state of Republican politics, is that every Republican who is running, you know, will talk about, they won't say we're going to cut Social Security, which is probably what needs to happen, to be completely honest, but they'll, you know, say that they're going to work on entitlement reform and things like that, and then once they get into office, they never do it because they know where their money's coming from.
Well, and I'm going to push back a little bit there. I don't think Social Security is an entitlement. I think this money that's going out for COVID relief is definitely turning into an entitlement, but it's not an entitlement because people have paid into it. I've paid into it. I'm continuing to pay into it. That's my money. And speaking of my money, while they're handing out all this free phony baloney money out of Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
I filed my taxes back in February, okay? And because I had a lousy year in 2020, I always overpay because mm-hmm. One year, I did my taxes and I owed $8,000 in federal taxes, and that will make your heart stop.
Yeah.
So now I have a strategy where I overpay my federal taxes, and because I had a lousy year in 2020, I have a decent sized return coming.
Yeah.
And I still don't have it.
Yeah.
So while you're listening to this, I'm sure you are in the Oval, and you're writing all these checks for people who aren't working. Can I have the money that I overpaid in the year 2020? That's all I want. I want my money back. It's not an entitlement. It's my money.
Well, yeah.
I gave them an interest-free loan for a year.
Yeah, I wouldn't call that an entitlement, yeah.
No, that's not an entitlement. That's my money, and I would like it. Thank you, sir. Okay, I want to leave you with one little thought here on jobs. My friend Misty Hansinger, she actually runs a company where she tries to hire people, and she's frustrated
mm-hmm.
to the point you'd made.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've got rising salaries. They're doing everything they can to get people off the couch, out of Netflix, out of their Nintendo,
mm-hmm.
whatever the hell they're doing. So she posted this. It's a meme of a kid at a doctor, okay? And the doctor says to the kid, "You have what we call an irrational sense of entitlement. It won't kill you, but it will cause you to believe that you deserve shit for doing nothing."
Yeah, sounds about right.
I cannot say it any better than that.
That sounds about right.
So, good vacation. I'm glad to be back with you. Until next week, this is Dale Carter's America.
The views expressed on Dale Carter's America are Dale's and Kurt Wheeler's. They do not necessarily reflect the views of KFKF or Steel City Media. Comments can be sent to DaleC@KFKF.com. Thanks for listening. Check back every week for new episodes.